Welcome back to the 20-Minute VC with your host, Harry Stebbings, who you can also find on Snapchat, at hstebbings. That's Stebbings with two Bs, and I'd love to see you on Snapchat. And if you've listened to our episode with Neeraj Agrawal on Monday, then you would know that to celebrate the release and success of the official SaaStr podcast brought to you by myself and the godfather of SaaS himself, Jason Lemkin, we are doing a SaaS feature week here at the 20-Minute VC, and I've been lucky enough to be joined by the SaaS experts themselves, Battery Ventures. And joining me in the hot seat today from Battery, I'm delighted to welcome Logan Bartlett. Logan is an investor at Battery, where he focuses on growth investments for B2B software companies, and he's currently involved in Battery's investments in Pendo and StreamSets. And before joining Battery, Logan was in investment banking with Spurrier Capital Partners, a boutique merchant bank focused on the technology sector. And prior to that, Logan served as an investment banking analyst at Deutsche Bank, focusing on financial technology. Now, despite the investment banking background, sorry Logan, I recently had the chance to spend some time with him in SF, and I really have to say he's the most super cool, incredibly fun, and hugely insightful chap, a real rising star of the VC industry for me, so watch out for this one. But before we meet Logan today, it is very important to recharge your batteries. What a pun. Batteries, Battery Ventures, anyway. There's no better way to recharge your batteries than with a Lisa mattress. But this isn't just any mattress. This mattress is crafted to perfection with a combination of memory foam and cool latex-like foam designed to keep you cool at night. However, the genius does not stop there, with the mattress even better being delivered to your house, meaning there's no more awkward showroom buying nightmares. You don't even have to leave your front door. It's delivered to your house if you live in the UK, US or Canada, and all mattresses are made in the UK and the US. So join me in a Lisa mattress. That sounds a little rogue, but you know what I mean. And by heading over to lisa.com/VC and enter the promo code VC75 to get $75 off your order. Amazing, I know. How could we also forget the kind folk at Matomot for providing all the data and analysis for the show today? And you must follow @thinker on Twitter. He does an incredible job with the Matomot Daily, and he actually introduced me to Logan Bartlett, so I'm extremely grateful to him for that. But without further ado, I'm now delighted to welcome Logan Bartlett, investor at Battery Ventures.
3, 2, 1, 0. You have now arrived at your destination.
Logan, it's so awesome to have you on the show, having met in real life in San Francisco at your Battery party. Thank you for inviting me to that, by the way. But it's fantastic to have you on the show today. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Glad to be here, Harry.
Now, I'd love to discuss how you made your entrance into the wonderful world of VC and what it was that enticed you to VC and then to join Battery in the first place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it wasn't an intentional route. I started out at a liberal arts school in Virginia, because that was where my parents wanted me to go. And I majored in business because that was what my parents wanted me to do. And, then I went to go work in investment banking because that was what I saw other people, before me do at school. I managed to make it to 24 without ever having made an independent decision in my life. And so at that point in time, I was really being drawn into technology. And one of my friends recruited me over to join a, upstart kind of merchant bank. If you think enterprise software focused Allen and Company, if you're familiar with that at all, that was what they were trying to do, and it involved working with more early stage tech companies, which was something that was intriguing to me. And so I went and did that, and I did it for 3 years and really enjoyed my experience, but I found myself just drawn earlier and earlier. So we were working with companies that were, you know, a couple hundred people, and they were looking to go public or thinking through some strategic options, and we would come in and invest and advise alongside those companies. And I found myself really drawn to the guys that were, you know, 10 to 50 to 100 employees and were really thinking through scale. And so I got introduced to Neeraj, and I had crossed paths. Neeraj at Battery had crossed paths along the way prior to that. And so I reached out to him around that time and said, here's what I'm thinking through, and ended up being a pretty good fit between the two of us. And so I've been at Battery now for coming up on 2 years.
So as a young chap entering the industry, I'd love to hear how you've gone about trying to build your own personal brand and identity in a sea of identities and people vying for the attention. You know, VC blogs are second to none now. So how have you gone about trying to build that personal brand, and what strategies have you used?
Yeah, totally. So I think first and foremost, it's just about being authentic to who you are. And I've always, you know, before going into venture, before that I was kind of exposed to it, there was always a veil of secrecy around it, it seemed, at least to me. And it was kind of a black box that I didn't really understand what the inputs were. I understood the outputs, but I didn't really know what went on into the decision-making process. And so I think podcasts like this are great in kind of unveiling how who the people are and how they think about it. But my approach has just been to be as authentic to who I am and what I care about. And so hopefully that resonates with the people that I work with. You know, it's not necessarily if you're very transparent about who you are and what you care about and some of those things, it's not necessarily going to be for all people. But I found kind of building a brand or at least thinking thoughtfully about who you are can be pretty taxing unless you're being authentic to your personality. And so that's been kind of the most consistent thing that I've thought of in approaching my thought process from a more public perspective.
And then what's your view on the kind of juxtaposition in VC branding between the branding of yourself as a VC investor, you know, Logan Bartlett, versus branding Battery? You know, there's some rock star marketer VCs, you know, your Mark Zusters, who are upfront in many ways, just from their marketing perspective plays alone. So how do you view that juxtaposition between branding the VC and branding yourself?
Yeah, well, I will say it's for the first time, it seems like there is more celebrity. There are celebrity VCs to some extent where the personality is first and foremost, and then the investment is secondary to that. We'll always be, or I'll certainly always be much more focused on the investment side of it and actually building value and working with the companies and all of those things. And so I sort of view the branding aspect of it as a means to have people kind of self-select into the right person to work with and the right partner that they want to have for their business. But it's not a means to an end in and of itself. And I will say, you know, coming over to Battery, you sort of have a brand associated with the entity itself. And so when I was coming from a boutique merchant bank, boutique, no one's heard of you. Merchant bank, no one really wants to talk to you. I get the Battery, and now I'm smarter, I'm funnier, and people want to talk to me a lot more. So, it, you know, just being authentic to your own voice, I think, is probably what's most important. And if that happens to line up with the firm itself, then that's great. But if not, you know, you need to be true to who you are.
I think it's always important to remember why VCs build brands. And at the end of the day, they're building brands to a large extent to get deal flow and to be kind of recognized within a space as a leader, which then gets deal flow. So I'm intrigued, as you know, that's one method of deal sourcing. What's your method of deal sourcing? We've heard the likes of Paige Craig say he's a hunter. How would you describe your methods?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think as you build a brand, the ability for inbound flow to come about is only enhanced. But I certainly don't think I'm smart enough to think in a vacuum of what's going on in a bunch of different markets and then try to go out and proactively work with people to create opportunities or create businesses or anything like that. So from a deal flow perspective, you know, there's certain things that I look for in businesses, but it is very much networking and outbound kind of oriented, where I'm as thoughtful as I possibly can be in approaching the entrepreneurs and coming in from either referrals or introductions from people that I know. But if there's an interesting company that I don't know, I'm more than willing to send the CEO an email and say, these are the three reasons that I find it interesting, would love to talk to you. And I think that ultimately is as much a part in the way that I find deals as anything else.
And talking of kind of outbound, I'm really intrigued to see your thought process on how you approach new and potential markets. So, you know, you could look at Slack and see a massive rise in the potential of bots and Slack bots. So how do you approach new markets and kind of think about the strategic thinking that goes into opportunities in new markets?
Yeah, so I think there's two components to that. One is kind of having predefined thesis around things. And then the other one is discovering things that seem to be working and digging into the various aspects around a particular business that's working and understanding why it's working. And so I would say we do both. We will look at, you know, SaaS software and say, all right, well, a lot of these applications are going to need to be mobilized. What's enabling enterprise mobility? And if things do get turned into mobile applications, well, then what does that mean from an analytics perspective? What does that mean from an end user perspective and all of those things? So we do take kind of a top-down approach in thinking about some of those things. But then oftentimes, it really is monitoring who's getting traction and knowing what's going on in the ecosystem and figuring out what's resonating with the end customer. Because ultimately, we can sit in our office and try to think about what's going to resonate to an individual customer themselves. But we're thinking about so many different markets, particularly when you start thinking about horizontal software versus vertical software and selling into all these nuanced verticals, it starts to become difficult for us to have any perspective on what's going to resonate in the trucking market, right? Or the insurance market, or the field services market. Like, those are all very nuanced kind of industries. And so a lot of times it is, hey, that company is getting a lot of growth. Why is that the case? And then we'll kind of go explore different nooks and crannies that might be interesting.
And integrating two topics there, you said about the predefined thesis and then integrating that to the branding. One thing I always get concerned about is if you're too outwards in displaying your thoughts and feelings on a particular market, say mobile payments. I can't stand mobile payments and I'm very outward in stating so on my Medium blog. Do you ever worry that by having such a set thesis that you could deter startups from coming to you with their idea?
That's an interesting point. And it's certainly, I think you want your arms around the types of things that you like to do and that you like to spend time on. And so at the end of the day, I like looking for opportunities that are going to turn into transformative businesses. There are certain of those that I feel like I have my arms around and can get up to speed much quicker. And you're not talking to someone that has no perspective on where you're coming from and you need to go through an explain the last 20 years of the industry and how we got to this point. And so I prefer every conversation that I have with a company, I'm coming with some framework and some ability to assess what they're doing and whether or not I personally find it interesting. And so there's a lot of ways to build companies, and there's a lot of value to be created in doing so. But the more you can stay kind of targeted and focused, I think the ability to get up the curve and have meaningful conversations with entrepreneurs happens much quicker. And so I really do try to stay within the bounds of what I understand for that reason.
And talking of assessing companies there, and you mentioned also what you look for in startups, you're very much located in the B2B space, a space where a lot of investors are very much focused on whether you can get to 10 million ARR by year two, and what your churn is, and all these metrics. Is that very much your thesis in approaching startup evaluation, or do you take a more holistic approach?
Yeah, no, there's definitely two aspects of it. One is just the framework of points in time that we'll look at businesses. This is as much pattern recognition as anything else, but I sort of think about it as the ones of stages. And so there's the 1 million in ARR standpoint. There's the 1 million that you're adding a quarter. And then there's the 1 million that you're adding a month. And so those are three different points in time in a business's journey. And I think we'll take it from a different perspective at each point as we're looking at it. And I think we have a pretty good framework of evaluating those types of opportunities. So that's certainly the pattern recognition side from a metric standpoint. But at the end of the day, we do need to understand the markets. And so seeing the kind of pull through from a customer standpoint is important. But if it's an area that we don't have a thesis in, we're not going to get up to speed quick enough to make a decision. And I don't think we'll ultimately be the right partner for you if we really don't know your market and the ability to speak to it, at least in some form, initially on the conversation.
And then speaking of pattern recognition, as a relative newbie to the VC scene, how are you looking to develop your own personal pattern recognition when it comes to startups?
Yeah, no, it's a hard one because you've only seen as much. I've only seen 2 years worth of information here in what companies have done and what's been successful. So from a pattern recognition standpoint, I would say I'm a big reader of just everything I can possibly get my hands on about businesses and how they got started, particularly in the last 20 years. So I go back and read the story of eBay, the story of, there's a book about the PayPal Wars is the name of the book, and understanding how PayPal got to where they were, understanding the story of Amazon, understanding LinkedIn and Salesforce and Oracle and PeopleSoft and all those businesses. And that kind of serves as the pattern recognition to some extent. And then everything else outside of that is really by osmosis. Being around, having a firm that's been around for 33 years, like Battery has, and having partners that have been here for, 15, 20 years, they've seen a lot of things. And so I'm really trying to learn from the people around me on a day-to-day basis and pick up little snippets of information from what they've seen in their history. And so it's kind of those two components inform my own pattern recognition capabilities.
And then I'm intrigued to kind of move to slightly more financial markets. And we often hear about the Series A crunch. For all of us in the industry, the Series A crunch seems to pervade a lot of conversation. And I'm intrigued for you now. We know that Battery is slightly full stack investors, going from seed to pre-IPO. IPO, as I think Neeraj said, but largely your Series A, B investors. Am I right?
I think as the markets have evolved in the last couple of years, you've probably seen us do more A and B investments. I think 3 or 4 years ago, we were doing much more in the later stage. So I think we shift from that perspective. So of late, I would say that's probably a fair characterization.
So as an insider of that, as a Series A, B potentially investor, what's it been like for you? Do you see the Series A crunch as a very prominent problem? I mean, we've seen a mass of startups emerge due to the decrease in cost of them setting up in the first place. So what's your view on this?
It certainly makes it harder for us to figure out what's working because there's always a Me Too company that's not too far behind. They're doing something in a interesting way, and they're resonating with customers as well. And so it's definitely difficult to pull ahead in a market without someone else being right at your hip. And so that certainly keeps you honest with regard to price and product development and all of those things. But It makes it difficult on the financial side from like a customer acquisition standpoint. If you have someone else that's willing to undercut your price pretty substantially to get the deal done, so I think that has made it difficult from a VC perspective and from a company perspective when looking at kind of the competitive ecosystem as well. So that's something that we're definitely thinking through. And I would say from a more macro level, we've seen everyone with the Fidelities and the T. Rowe's and the mutual funds kind of playing at the later stage because companies are staying private longer. And that's where these guys are able to generate a little bit more alpha in their portfolio. People have kind of moved down from there. And so when you have that happening at the further later end, you have cost of computing going down at the earlier end, and you have more the proliferation of seed and early stage angel investing going on. At the end of the day, that kind of creates two different areas that are compressing into a single one. And so it does lead to a lot more funding of companies that maybe 4 or 5 years ago wouldn't have gotten funding. And so that definitely has an impact on the ecosystem.
And you spoke about the later stages of the market there. And I've seen a slide of yours. I think it was with Massimoc maybe. Anyway, from the past, you stated that more institutional investors have made their way into the private markets and then the startups are staying private for longer. And you followed up with saying that this was a win-win. And I was wondering why you thought this. To me, it seemed that VCs that were traditionally in later rounds would just get priced out and then valuations would just get inflated. So I'm intrigued to hear why it's a win-win.
Yeah, I would need to go back and look at the slide itself, because if I said that, maybe my thinking has evolved a little bit more as it's played itself out. But I do think that the trend of companies staying private longer, I think it has both a positive and a negative impact associated with it. On the positive side, you're allowed to keep innovating at a much greater rate, it seems, on the private market versus public one, and you don't have shareholders that are focused on an earnings in earnest that can actually move your quarter on a regular basis when you're in the private market. That being said, there's a lot of benefits to going public, and we certainly encourage the companies when they reach the right maturity and the right predictability and revenue to do that. And so I think we're seeing a little bit of a normalization now. I'm optimistic over the course of the next 6 months or so, this drought that we've had over the last quarter in companies going public, I think we're going to see that shore itself up. And it does seem that the money flowing in from the non-traditional private investors has slowed. And so hopefully we'll reach more of a steady state in the ecosystem over the course of the next 6 months, where things get a little bit more regular in the inflow and the outflow of returns to the ultimate LP base as well.
Absolutely. And I'd love to then dive into a quick fire round now, where I say a short statement and you give me your immediate thoughts.
Let's do it.
So you mentioned books earlier, but what's your favorite book and why?
Definitely. I favorite book's a tough one. I would say the one that I've enjoyed the most recently, a book by Sudhir Venkatesh, who the name of the book is Gang Leader for a Day. And it's about an academic PhD student that gets the opportunity to go inside a Chicago gang ecosystem for over the course of a couple of years and actually gets to run it for a single day. Pretty interesting in the whole social dynamics that go along with that as well. So that was one I enjoyed recently.
And then you recently tweeted the Andy Grove statement, "Only the paranoid survive." And I'm interested, how do you address the issue then of FOMO as a new investor?
Yeah, totally. Well, I think the way we think about it is at the end of the day, 2,000 companies in a given year will get funded from venture investors, and 200 of those will probably be done by firms that we would consider peers of ours and quality investors. And at the end of the day, 10 of those will drive something like 97% of the return for that vintage year. I'm always worried that there's a deal going on that we're not going to be a part of that's going to drive a ton of returns for their investor base. And so it's one of the things that if you're not worried about someone beating you and getting to something earlier, then I think you're probably slipping and falling off your game. So it's certainly something that I think about all the time and always trying to find the best companies out there in the ecosystem.
And then what's the biggest learning for you from working alongside Neeraj with his incredible wealth of experience?
A ton. I think the single one that resonates most with me is just the level of humbleness he has. I don't know if being as good of an investor as he is replicable. And I don't know if I can internalize those skills. I'm certainly trying to on a daily basis. I know if that guy can be as humble as he is, then I certainly can be or try to be much the same. So that's kind of the biggest one.
And then the favorite blog or newsletter?
I would say Dan Primack. I read every day pretty quickly. That's kind of the first one that I'll click on and go through. And I always enjoy his thought perspective on the broader financial markets.
Mm-hmm. And then what value add would you most like to improve or add upon?
Yeah, I would say just the overall kind of company building aspect of it. The board and the C-suite executives, you know, at the end of the day are kind of recruiting arms and chief evangelists for the company. And so I think the biggest value add that a VC can have is just being able to look either other independent board directors or executives that a CEO is trying to hire in, look them in the eye and explain why, you know, you believe in this team, this opportunity, and why they should come be a part of the ride with you. And so I don't think that's the most scalable thing in the world, but I think it's probably the most important that an investor can help with.
And then what's the most recent investment and why did you say yes?
Yeah, so there's one that's not announced, but it's in the marketing space, and it's a Series C, and we spent time with these guys in their Series B, and ultimately weren't able to get there on terms. And over the course of the last 24 months, I think we probably talked to them every month at least, and we turned over literally every stone, talking to as many customers as we possibly could, as many competitors in the ecosystem, as many of the large players that kind of play in the same area that they do. And by the end of it, these guys were probably a little worn out with our exhaustive diligence, but yeah, we're excited. You know, that's just getting to the starting line now for us. So now we'll go work with them to build a longstanding company. So we're pretty excited about that, but we certainly did our work, as they will fully tell you.
Well, Logan, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been absolutely fantastic to hear your story, and I'm so grateful to you for sharing it with me.
Harry, this has been great, and congrats on all the success. Look forward to hearing more of the podcast as they come live.
What a top man, and so great to have Logan on the show. And a huge thank you to the team at Battery for providing us with Neeraj and Logan this week to celebrate the release and success of the official SaaStr podcast, brought to you by Jason Lemkin and I. And if you haven't had a chance to check that out yet, then head over to iTunes and search for SaaStr. That's SaaStr. And if you're loving the 20-Minute VC or SaaStr, then you can follow me on Snapchat at HStebbings. I promise you, Jason Lemkin will be on Snapchat soon. We are working on it, trust me. And you can also sign up for the newsletter for the 20-Minute VC on the20minutevc.com, so you never have to miss an episode or an update from us. But before we leave you today, the 20-Minute VC is brought to you, and back to the battery analogy, powered by Lisa. Lisa are like the Toms and Warby Parker of the mattress industry. Why? Well, having created an awesome online end-to-end mattress buying experience, replacing the worst ever experience of buying and testing a mattress in artificial showrooms, that still isn't enough for the team at Lisa, as they like to give back to society itself, really, which is why for every 10 mattresses Lisa sells, they donate one to a shelter. And these mattresses are not also just any mattresses. They're engineered with three unique layers, including 2 inches of memory foam and 2 inches of latex-like foam designed to keep you cool at night. Not only are they engineered to perfection, but all Lisa mattresses are made in the UK and the US, and they can be shipped to the UK, the US, and Canada for free. So try the 100-night trial by heading over to lisa.com/VC. That's LEESA.com/VC. And enter the promo code VC75 at checkout to get a cool $75 off. And in the theme of the SaaS week we have going on here at the 20-Minute VC, I'm delighted to announce we will have Nicolas Desain from Algolia on the show on Friday for Founders Friday. So stay tuned for that, and we look very forward to bringing you our Founders Friday.